Red Pod.
Pure beef patty, lettuce, tomato.
You really think that just because you have an idea, it belongs to you?
You ain't never in your life heard a disc jockey come through here like me.
Mixes different quotes of people and a wide variety of songs, very, very freeform, which is the point of Dharmamapo.
Push it right to the edge.
Well, with my boyfriend, we just do it raw. We like it raw.
I know you like two things I like. Ooh. Chicken and chicks.
I know two trip is just too far.
Free socks.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of this show's producer, WMFO, its staff and management, or Tufts University.
You had the power to be all good, all wise, and all powerful. Why would you make the world you have now?
I don't know. I was really drunk at the time.
I was not drunk. I was on pills.
My show, I can do whatever I want, so I am.
I want you to play like I do.
One teaspoon of this new drug, LSD, could render 50,000 people temporarily insane.
Where is it?
Get your own show. Play your own music.
Funnily, it's layers. Built up on top of one another. Like a sandwich.
Layering different sounds on top of each other. Layering different sounds on top of each other.
Computers can do that?
あなたはプラスティック寿司ストロベリーズ&タイムを聞いています。こちらは WMFO メッドフォード 91.5FM。
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
Yes, sir.
Are you listening?
Yes, I am.
Plastic.
Strawberries.
We begin our moment of here and now together. We'll share music, and when each of us becomes a pure instrument.
Welcome to the Plastic Sushi Strawberries in Time Sound Collage. That's right! It's not just a radio program, it's a sound collage with audio clips from TV shows, documentaries, political speeches, who knows where, mixed in between and on top of the music that always follows some kind of a weekly theme. First off, I'd like to say thanks to Wyatt for filling in for DJ Easy Ed before me this evening. Quite a cool mix of hip-hop and some more. And our theme this evening is one of the little more meandering kinds of themes, and one that I have done a kind of series on. It's a whole bunch of really short songs and a couple of longer ones. And we began the show with something from the Japanese band Dragon Ash, their intro to their album Rio de Emoción. And then something from another Japanese band, Pizzicato 5, and Holiday for Audrey H. And both of those songs coming in at well under 2 minutes. Backing me up right now is Brian Eno. And this is a song called Ikebukuro, which is about the Tokyo neighborhood, also a tea stop. Yes, it's a train station on the Tokyo line. And let's see. Well, this evening, we are going to be playing our first set, will consist of a whole bunch of really short songs. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to keep up typing them, but I'll do my best in Spinatron, where we keep all our lists, our playlists. And then we're going to be hearing Jimmy Page playing some Led Zeppelin songs live with the Black Crowes as his backing band. And then also for some of our longer songs are going to be some pieces from my favorite Israeli band, the electronic duo of Infected Mushroom. And also in tonight's mix, some thoughts from the Nobel Prize winning physicist Richard Feynman contemplating the many aspects of the universe that could be understood in a glass of wine. Well, let's get the rest of your Friday night sound collage party going here with a whole bunch of really short songs. That'll be a full set of them. And then we'll come back for a couple of the longer ones. And we're going to begin things. Well, of course, you know, this is a Plastic Sushi, so we are relentless with the genre jumping. And we're going to be doing that very much so in the next set. And of course, we're going to start off with some Japanese music. Here is Denki Groove and All My Muscles Work Machine Belong to Me, here on the Plastic Sushi Strawberries in Time Sound Collage. WMFO. MF.
You don't have to worry about me because I'm never going to have sex.
Oh, Bobby, now don't say that.
I thought that's what you wanted.
Well, yes, if you were my daughter, but You're my son.
For girls, but it's okay for boys.
It's called the double standard, Bobby. Don't knock it. We got the long end of the stick on that one.
I see.
I gotta admit, sometimes I feel weak for loving you the way I do. It's behind me. Can't control it or force it to be, you know, what I want it to be. I think about you so much when I'm with you and when I'm not. It's deep the way looking in your eyes.
It wasn't that I was some saint trying to improve the world. It was because I was a selfish bastard that just, I knew what I wanted to do.
Yeah. a minute.
Double take.
She's a rebel, she's a saint, she's a salt of the earth, and she's dangerous. She's a rebel, vigilante, missing link on the brink of destruction. From Chicago to Toronto, she's the one that they call, oh, what's her name? She's a symbol of resistance, and she's holding on my arm like a hand grenade. She dreamin'
You're tuned in to the Plastic Sushi Strawberries and Thyme Sound Collage here on WMFO in Medford. Yes, we are Tufts Freeform Radio. Our theme this evening is a whole bunch of really short songs and a couple of longer ones. And we have a special WMFO guest here in Studio A. Yes, Arthur from the Grand Hour on Wednesdays at 6 a.m.
For now on Wednesdays. Because I might have to change that.
Sure, I've been all over the dial here.
Because of the job.
Yeah, oh, yes.
Job opportunity, I might have to be at work a little bit earlier, so I might have to change my time.
Can we announce on the air that you're going to be a Harvard employee, or should we not say that?
Well, you said it. Well, I just want to distinguish what in what capacity, because I could be a professor, could be a lawn maintenance, could be a locksmith, could be in hospitality.
In any case, you're working for the world's most prestigious university.
That's what I hear.
Yeah.
That's what I hear.
Yeah.
But where I come from, it's just Harvard. It's just like any big school. But I would think Oxford would be one of the bigger schools of the world. At least in the Western culture.
It's got name recognition, too. Yeah.
So I would think that would be ahead of Harvard, but not to discredit Tufts here. It's a fine little campus, it looks like, here in Medford.
Yeah, I mean, universities in a big way are really all about prestige. I mean, there's the learning that's going on, but I think to understand what universities want their place in the world to be, it's for people to think highly of them, to say that they do great things, all these things that just come out to prestige as the summable quantity.
And their alumni. They pride themselves on the alumni on their websites and so forth. Which at Harvard, they had Dean Wareham from the Galaxy 500, which was originally from the Boston area. I didn't see him on their list of alumni, but he's a big player, I guess, in music around here in the 90s, late 80s, 90s, and went on with Luna back in New York. But yeah, we'll see about the Grand Hour, what if I can, thinking maybe just move it up an hour.
So let's tell some of the folks who might not be up at 6 a.m. what the Grand Hour is all about.
Just radio dramas. Just old radio dramas from the 1930s to the 50s. The golden age, they say, of radio. Could be something Orson Welles. Or usually I like to have a mystery suspense followed by a Western, because my dad said, if you're going to do that, boy, you better play Westerns.
One of the things I like listening to your episodes is imagining being a person listening to that on the radio and, you know, what the times were like. I do a lot of time traveling as enjoyment.
Like Chris Earl?
Beyond
just
that.
Just a pun on the station.
I'm much more into the time traveling than he is, because I go back to primary sources. I've got this collection of Life magazines from the Boston Public Library when Life was a weekly publication. And essentially, I've got 16 complete years worth from 1950 through 1969. And when you go and you read a magazine like that and the history is unfolding then, you're approaching it in a different way than, you know, looking back on old times. And I think one of the important things with that is people having the sense that this is the future now.
Yeah,
like, it may have been 1948, but it's like, this is the world and it is exciting. Or more particularly, what I get out of the Grand Hour is radio is being that cutting edge of technology.
Yeah, the newspapers were scared of it. They had their problems with the newspapers, and Orson Welles went on to do the, you know, the whole parody of Citizen Kane and the newspaper industry and all that. And what people say to me about it is they like the language, the vernacular, even though some of it could be a little dated.
Sure.
But the general, like some of the kids, the juvenile ones, if you listen to them now, they don't sound so juvenile. And now you wonder how that was, if juveniles really had that sort of working vocabulary, like the Superman series I played with Batman and Robin. Like they were talking about things that kids these days wouldn't words they wouldn't use or really understand.
Yeah, and we wonder about the swear words because things like with the way the media could present things like that. But yeah, then there's also just something about the way the people talk different and thought different. Yeah.
Yep. That's what people that don't know me that I encounter, because I do live in Medford and promote my show in the community. They say, you know, they tune in. And, wow, that was something. They like to laugh at the particular word they heard or a phrase or that they remember their dad saying. So that kind of evokes a lot of memories with some of the older people.
Yeah.
Not the younger ones, but the older folks in the Medford area.
So also, since we're on the air, our first on-the-air appearance together, I also wanted to mention to people over the air that before I personally met Arthur here, we had developed something of an email correspondence, and Arthur is actually Lance Arthur Davis. And that's a reasonably unique name. So when I was corresponding with him with email, I thought he was Lance Arthur Davis, the Somerville alderman, now city councilor. Well, actually, he's not.
Is he a councilor now?
Well, the names have changed from alderman to city councilor.
So he's still in. He's still in office.
Yes.
Okay.
And so there was the block party in September of 2018, and I was being a speaker there with the Tufts Housing League, and I met Lance Davis for the first time, and I shook his hand, and I kind of mentioned something about the radio. I forget exactly what the words were.
You told me, Arthur, and you approached him, because you told me that, and I was like, I didn't know what to think.
Right.
I realized that you would, because I had actually met him. Did I tell you that story? I met him outside, just wanted his sticker because we had the same name. And he's like, are you going to vote for me? I'm like, no. He's like, well, he didn't reveal who he was. He said, are you going to vote for Lance Davis? I said, no, I just want a sticker because that's my name. Showed him my driver's license. He wanted to have an email correspondence after the election, I guess, because Lance Davis's aren't as common. So, yeah, that the first time I called you, or not the first, or maybe the second, you said something to me about you're the alderman of the station. And I thought, what the heck is that supposed to mean? But of course, usually I'm barbecuing and having fun when I call you, because I barbecue like every night. So I thought, well, maybe I heard that wrong, or, you know, some New England word I didn't pick up on. But yeah. Edward thought I was the alderman for a while.
And when I met the alderman and I said Arthur to him in his official, he kind of looked at me very confused, and I kind of took it as, okay, we'll keep that a secret. You're not out that with the other alderman that you're actually Arthur on the radio. And
you can see how they might want to have an alter ego. Just an hour a week of, you know, if he wanted just to do whatever he wanted without the political eye on him.
So, now that you've heard the rest of the story, what we are going to do is to have one of our longer songs starting off here. And this is Jimmy Page playing a Led Zeppelin song, a very classic Led Zeppelin song. Not with Led Zeppelin, but he's got
the Yardbirds?
Not
with the Yardbirds?
Oh, yes. Well, we've got that. We'll talk more about that a little bit later. But this is with the backing band The Black Crowes. And that album that they did with Jimmy Page, Live at the Greek, is just an outstanding album. And I'm so happy to be able to play you a piece. Well, actually, we're going to be hearing two pieces from that this evening here on the Plastic Sushi Strawberries and Thyme Sound Collage.
Yeah. Yeah. conductor from the Shemel. At the entrance to the Khalifa's palace, there was a garden full of fountains and flowers. It was here that a certain Shaiwi used to come each day to sit under a fig tree. He would set his basket down and take from it a sheepskin, which he always carried with him. Then he would spread out the sheepskin and sit on it. In the basket, he also had charcoal, a teapot, and a bowl of majun. He would place three stones in such a way that there was room between them to make a fire, set the teapot on top, and wait for the water to boil. Any day you could see him sitting there in the garden on the sheepskin. He had no work, but he had many friends who kept him alive with small sums of money, which they gave him from time to time. It became known that the Khalifa was suffering from an abscess in a private part of his body, and that as a result he could not sit down. The best doctors had been called, but they were not able to help him. The reason for this was that the Khalifa, being ashamed, would not let them examine the abscess. He called in holy men and tolba, who chanted the Quran for him, but the pain went on. The Nshaiwi heard about the Khalifa's difficulties, and straightway he went to the garden and began to eat majun. He ate more than usual that day, and smoked a great deal of keef as well. All the while he was thinking about the Khalifa. When he was feeling happy, he lay back in the shade of the fig tree and said to himself, "I think I can cure him." Soon he rose, folded his sheepskin, put his pipe and teapot and bowl of majun into the basket, and went to knock at the Khalifa's gate. A Sudanese opened it and asked him what he wanted. "I'm a doctor," he said. "Where are you from?" said the black man, looking at his ragged robes. "We've had all the doctors in the country." "I'm from the Shemel," he told him. "I've got medicines that will make anybody feel better, no matter how sick he is." "Wait," said the black man, "I'll be back in a while." The Sudanese went into his master's chamber and told him that a tubib had arrived from the Shemel. The Khalifa was lying on his belly. He raised his head a little and sighed. "Bring him in," he said. The servant went to the gate. "Come with me," he told the Nshaiwi. In the chamber, the Nshaiwi saw the Khalifa lying face down on the bed. "Bring plenty of honey and hot tea," he told the black man, and he sat down on the bed beside the Khalifa. When the servant returned with the tea and honey, the Nshaiwi took out his bowl and scooped up a large ball of majun, which he handed to the Khalifa. "First eat this," he told him, "and drink the tea afterward." The Khalifa did as he was told, and the Nshaiwi kept giving him more tea to drink. When an hour had passed, and the Nshaiwi saw that the majun had taken effect, he sent the servant out of the room and stood up. "This is the moment for the medicine," he said. He reached down, pulled off the Khalifa's chemir, leaving his buttocks uncovered. The Khalifa did not even notice. Then the Nshaiwi anointed his sex with honey and thrust it with great force into the Khalifa. The Khalifa uttered a scream and tried to throw the Nshaiwi off, but he did not have the strength. After that, he was quiet while the Nshaiwi worked. "The operation is almost over, Your Excellency," said the Nshaiwi. He finished and withdrew his sex, very much pleased. The abscess had burst, and he summoned the black man and told him to bring towels and clean his master. Meanwhile, the Khalifa, who had been in pain for a long time, was so relieved by the bursting of the abscess that he fell asleep. Seeing this, the Nshaiwi unrolled his sheepskin and lay down on it at the foot of the bed. In the morning when he awoke, he found the Khalifa still sleeping. The Khalifa awoke shortly afterward, and the Nshaiwi helped him out of bed. "I have no more pain," said the Khalifa. "Alhamdulillah," said the Nshaiwi. Together, they went into the Khalifa's bathing chambers. After the servants had poured water on them and gone out, the Khalifa said, Last night when you operated on me, what did you use? A pole of some kind? Your Excellency, I used this. He pointed at his sex. What? Cried the Khalifa. But that means you assaulted me. You assaulted your Khalifa. No, Your Excellency, I operated on you, nothing more. Good, said the Khalifa, remembering that the Nchaiwi had indeed cured him. They came out of the hammam, and the Khalifa ordered a great festival to be given immediately. There were musicians and dancers, and the guests ate and drank tea for many hours. In the middle of the party, the Nchaiwi took out his bowl of majun and gave a spoonful to the Khalifa. Soon the Khalifa began to talk and laugh and sing, and then Nchaiwi knew that he was happy. He put everything into his basket and stood up. I must leave, Your Excellency, he said. How much do I owe you? The Khalifa asked him. Sidi, whatever you give me will be more than enough because it comes from you. He's a great doctor, thought the Khalifa. He sent a servant for a pouch full of dinars and gave it to him. Then Nchaiwi thanked him and left. Then he went across the street and sat under the fig tree to smoke kief.